Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. So Grammys, you guys, there was a lot of political intrigue around this. This morning, the big headline I'm seeing a lot is that it was the most low ratings that the Grammys have ever gotten. Drudge had that as his main story for the day. Grammys crash and burn, which I expect every single like live event or, you know, awards show to be the worst that has ever happened just because people are cord cutting. And
for sure.
Yeah.
Especially something like this that breaks down so conveniently into YouTube clips. It just feels like, yeah, I wouldn't expect that many people to actually be watching it on CBS. But apparently whether it's because of a long-term trend or because people objected to the political content. That is the implication that the Drudge Report wants us to take away.
Oh, because
that,
too many liberal artists were using a soapbox.
Kendrick Lamar's political statement and the fact that Hillary was involved in a sketch where they were reading the Fire and Fury.
Which is amazing.
Book. Yeah, which was kind of funny. I mean, it was a solid sketch. The premise being that next year, the Grammy for audiobook presentation, which is a Grammy, is definitely going to go to whoever reads Fire and Fury. And they tried different people out. And the punchline was they had Hillary Clinton reading some of it. But by far, the best moment is Cardi B was reading it.
Queen Cardi, first of her name.
Right. I think we have audio of that.
Cardi B.
If Trump was not having his 6:30 dinner with Steve Bannon, then more to his liking, he was in bed by that time with a cheeseburger. Why am I even reading this shit? I can't believe this. I can't believe that he really, this is how he lives his life.
Yo, the video, that's not even written because you can tell she's right. Looking off camera like at the producer or whatever.
She just can't believe
it. She really can't believe it.
Yeah.
Or she's the greatest actress ever.
Right. Like,
and if she is, either way, Cardi, you're always winning.
Yeah, she's...
Despite not winning a fucking thing yesterday.
Right. So that was the other kind of reaction that I saw is that they did not, and this is shocking for the Grammys because the Grammys always gets it right.
They always get it right.
Right. I mean, we count... I just don't listen to music until the Grammys happen for that year, and then I'm just like, all right, whoever the Grammys gave it to, that was the best music of the year.
I listen to one album a year, and it was whatever the Grammys say is the album of the year.
Right.
And then I wait 365 days.
Here we go, Bruno Mars. A album about, like... sex music for somebody who's never had sex, as we've established before on the Daily Zeitgeist. He just has that energy, man. He seems like a fun girl in high school. He's just like, hey guys, what's up? Like, I don't know. He just seems like a fun gal, but not the dude who I want singing my like sultry music about
No Versace on the floor.
No, I don't buy it.
That's not accessible to me. Yeah. How about like an old towel from the trunk
Target
of my car
on the floor?
Yeah, exactly.
Massimo on the floor.
What's the one Target brand that they do for towels? Anyway, that brand.
On the floor. The show opened with a Kendrick Lamar performance that was really dope. There was a part where... So at one point the screen flashes, this is a satire by Kendrick Lamar, which was weird because it was like... an ultra serious performance, but super producer Nick Stump pointed out that immediately after that, The Edge and Bono like strode out onto stage, which I don't know, they're like being the most self-serious people in the world. It was just funny to imagine that he was just being like, this is the satire, these guys coming out and thinking that with their rock and roll music, they can solve everything that he's
rapping about.
Hey,
but they used
to
be a band with a message.
Right, they did.
And now
they still have a message. We just don't want to hear it.
Right.
I guess. But I mean, like, you know, back in the day when U2 first came out, like, they were good with their protest music. And we were kind of talking about how they sort of lost touch, I guess, over the years, especially when Bono forgot how to count in Spanish also.
Why? What'd he say?
In one of the songs, he's like, uno, dos, Tres, catorce.
Yeah, that's right. 14?
14.
1, 2, 3, 14. Bro, you missed 11 fucking numbers in between.
He was going 0 to 100.
I just remember when Colin Farrell, I think, was on SNL one year pretending to be it, and he just leaned into that so bad. He's like, catorce. It was like the best fucking sketch. But for Spanish speakers out there, we're like, something is wrong here. Like, and they're proud. Look, who knows? There might be a hidden message in there that I totally missed, but based off what I'm hearing, not.
So Bruno Mars basically swept. He had the song of the year, the record of the year, which are two separate things. Like record, I guess, is like more for production and stuff. Song is like songwriting. He won both of those. He won album of the year. I don't know anybody who was like, that was a great album, Bruno Mars album. But he defeated Kendrick. We've talked before. The Grammys never get anything right. And in fact, just like all you have to do is look back at some of their recent work. They've continuously, like last year, they gave it to Adele over Beyonce. They love just giving the award to middle of the road pop artist over Beyonce and Kendrick.
You said that over Adele? You said middle of the road pop artist.
I'm sorry. I love Adele.
Here come the Adele Hive.
Seems like a lot of fun. She's very smart, and I cry every time I hear her music. Great voice,
but you know, terrible.
A great mind.
Terrible choice in football teams.
Right.
Sports Tottenham, and that's a whole other issue.
Okay,
but the album of the year, though, I don't know. I look at that.
Album of the year. Yeah, Damn is like going to go down as a great.
Damn or Awaken My Love. That fucking Childish Gambino album was fucking insane to me.
Insane.
And so is Damn. I don't know. This is the thing I think we're saying too before the show. Are we even surprised anymore? Like, I don't even know if it's worth getting like upset because the Grammys haven't been shit for
a long time. In 2000, Steely Dan won for Album of the Year over Radiohead's Kid A and the Marshall Mathers LP. Steely Dan, like, this was them coming back together after like 15 years and just being like old white dudes, you know, who like were getting back together one last time. In 1988, the year of like Metallica and Guns N' Roses, Jethro Tull, the flute like rock band, won for like metal album of the year. It's just like they are amazing at getting things extremely aggressively wrong.
Well, you just have to look at the committee.
Right.
Like, you know, when everybody's holding it down for like the AARP or like, you know, when everyone is voting, looks like they were at the Byron Nelson this year.
Right.
Like, you know, they're not going to understand albums like Awaken My Love and like Beck. Beyonce lost to Beck last year.
Right.
So,
2 years ago, but yeah.
Two years ago, you're right.
What do we do? You know, I think we just got to stop. I mean, SZA fucking didn't win New Artist of the Year.
Yeah. Jay-Z got shut out.
Which I understood that.
Jay-Z getting shut out.
He's cheating on Beyonce. You don't get no awards for cheating on Beyonce. I don't care how good this album. That whole album should have been contrition. If the album was just him crying for 12 tracks, maybe.
I'm sorry, B.
Yeah, he was still trying to seem cool and shit. I'm like, nah, fam, you cheated on Beyonce. No awards.
It could also be because he also just doesn't fuck with the Grammys anymore anyway. Right. He refused to perform on the Grammy stage. So
yeah,
he has a very tortured relationship with the Grammy
because he recognizes that they never give hip hop. Like in 1991, they gave Album of the Year, I think, to Fresh Prince and DJ Jazzy Jeff instead of Public Enemy. Like they just traditionally will go with whatever the whitest version.
Yeah, but I mean, to give them credit though, this is a like. Will Smith and Jazzy Jeff did really help to mainstream hip hop, like in the early 90s. I think that's a contribution people overlook a lot.
But they're like the politics of respectability kind of hip hop. Like, we don't curse and we're like.
Sure. And I think that's his thing. But you can't actually take away the fact that back then, like, Will actually had abilities as a lyricist. Like, that storytelling rap style, he was actually pretty good at. And Jazzy Jeff is actually a really good DJ. Like, I think we look back and we're like, man, y'all are corny.
Yeah.
And we look.
I mean, I owned Will 2K. I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah. I'm just saying that culturally, when you look back, there's a lot of people who are releasing the greatest albums of all time in their genres and they're giving it instead to.
And also, when you look at the winners, 11 of the 84 winners last night were women. Only 11 of the 84 were women.
Right.
And then the head of the Recording Academy had some real boneheaded shit to say after the awards, because they're talking about, oh, what do we do about women in the recording industry? He said, I think it has to, and this is a quote, I think it has to begin with women who have the creativity in their hearts and their souls, who want to be musicians, who want to be engineers, who want to be producers, who want to be part of the industry on an executive level, to step up, because I think they would be welcome.
So it's a matter of women not...
They don't want it. That's why.
They don't want it hard enough.
Oh, they're not trying to, you know, fucking navigate a fucking, like, misogynistic system of the recording industry.
How do you step up when you're being stepped on?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, get up from down there.
And I guess that just shows you how tone deaf the Grammys are in general. Like,
oh, for sure.
That's the guy running point. And he's like, you know, I think women, I guess they just don't want it.
I don't even see them around.
Yeah.
They definitely have a, so, I mean, I think they tried to dodge a bullet by shutting Ed Sheeran out of some of the key categories because they knew that he would have won, basically, if they had just given him as an option to the Recording Academy. But, you know, they still have a problem, and they probably need to replace that dude with, like, do what the Oscars just did, where they realized that, oh, shit, all of our awards are going to things that 80-year-old white men like, and nothing else. We wanted to just kind of talk briefly about President Trump's interview with Piers Morgan, because it is wildly entertaining, just because you can kind of look at both sides and laugh. They're just
fucking both Piers Morgan.
Crazy.
Fucking trash.
Okay, that was our coverage.
That's
of
it.
That.
Go do one.
So some of the best moments, they talked about gun control. Piers Morgan, this was the closest Piers Morgan came to holding his feet to the fire. He was like, why has nothing been done to stop somebody from doing what happened in Las Vegas again? And Trump was like, we do have gun control laws, but this is a sick person. And Piers Morgan's like, yeah, but he was able to legally buy 55 guns. And Trump was like, yeah, but the point is he would have had 55 bombs. He would have had 55 of something else if it weren't for – if there was gun control.
55 which,
good thing we got that bomb control.
Right. I mean, this is actually a mainstream gun rights argument that, well, bad people are bad people and nothing's going to stop them. But as I've talked about on this podcast before and just everywhere, anywhere that people will let me – speak out loud. I love talking about the British coal gas study, which found that when you take away the easy way for people to kill themselves, in this case, the people sticking their head in the oven, which used to be like the most popular way for people to kill themselves in England, they went to non-lethal gas just because it was more efficient, not because they were trying to save anybody's lives. Once the gas could no longer kill you, the suicide rate dropped by like a third, by however many suicides coal gas had made up before. So the idea is that, you know, because that people make really rash decisions and it's all about accessibility. And, you know, there's a reason that, you know, there aren't tons of mass bombings in America. There are lots of mass shootings. It's hard to build
a bomb.
And also, I mean, there are legal protections to keep you from, you know, if they see that you've gone to the grocery store and bought all the ingredients for a bomb, you know, that will draw their attention. You're not supposed to be able to do that. The thing that bombs don't have is a BRA, as super producer Nick
It would actually
Nick
be
Stumpf.
NBA.
The National Bomb Association. Right.
I'm just so sick of this argument, but goddamn, I have to admire the strength of the NRA. That is some real power. Are when they... just thousands of people can be shot all the time in America and no one can do anything about you because you have everybody in your pocket. The NRA is God.
Right.
They have a lot of friends. Some might be Russian, too. There's that investigation happening, too, because they're like, y'all spent a lot of money that last cycle. Where is it coming from?
Wait, what is it?
There was a story that came out last week that was talking about how there's a really close tie to the NRA and, like, certain Russian people. And there's one guy who has, like, a record of, like, laundering money for the Russians, had a relationship with the NRA, and they're trying to say, like, the amount that they spent the last election cycle was, like, much higher than they've ever spent before.
Oh, the NRA?
Yeah. And they're looking into kind of like some of the accounting to see what's going on.
See if maybe they got some of that money from.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that was a story. We'll probably look into that later.
It's just way too easy to kill people with guns. I think that if you're a fucked up person and you want to kill a bunch of people, like, you should at least have to work for it.
Right.
Like, you should have to stab everybody. Right. Like, be on foot.
Right.
It's fun. That's like, remember that old Chris Rock bit? He's like, look, if you made a bullet cost $5,000,
right,
you would have to fucking think. You like, right. I would shoot you. But I gotta wait for my next paycheck.
Like, right. Whatever. Worth
you have
it.
Some time. Yeah,
it's worth it.
So, yeah. But that whole interview was filled with fascinating things.
One of the more popular items from that was Piers Morgan. You know, he was talking to Trump about how much he respects women, and you know, they were so deep into how much Trump respects women that Piers had to just ask the question we've all been wondering: President Trump, do you identify as a feminist? Are you, in fact, a feminist? And the president said, no, I wouldn't say I'm a feminist, which I think everybody just, yeah. I'm shocked that the people working behind the camera could keep themselves from gasping aloud when he said that. He said, I think that would be maybe going too far. I'm for women. I'm for men. I'm for everyone. I think people have to go out. They have to go out and really do it. And they have to win. And women are doing great. And I'm happy about that.
Oh, so he's all about, you know, equality for everybody?
Right.
Do you guys remember a little song from Beyonce called Flawless?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Let me just play a section. You know, I don't know if you remember.
Feminist, a person who believes in the social, political, and economic equality of the sexes.
So if you believe in the equality, if you're for everybody, that would make you a feminist, too, if you're truly about equality for everyone, right?
Look, I appreciate Trump not lying. We know his ass ain't no damn feminist. He's out here talking about grabbing bitches by the pussy and whatnot. Just... Like, don't even lie. I appreciate that Trump didn't lie in this moment. He was like, y'all know I'm not a feminist. But, I'm assaulting women. What do you mean?
But what he's saying is that he has this, like, weird Fox News definition of feminism. You know what I mean? Like, because what he's saying is like, well, I don't know. It's like, I'm for women. I'm for men. I'm for everyone. I don't think he understands
what feminism
sort of generally
is.
He's means feminazis or whatever people try and attack like
misandry.
Feminist thought is. Yeah, exactly. Of being like, that's what he believes feminism. And that's why he's like, oh, well, that's not me.
Right.
And not that he even believes in equality for everyone, but he betrays himself in like how he even follows that answer up. Anyway,
right.
And I'm not surprised. I don't even know why I'm getting so fired up because there was bigger issues with that interview I had than that.
Yeah. Well, why don't you talk about what your biggest issue was?
Okay, let me tell you guys something. So I'm a huge fan of Arsenal Football Club in North London. You know, there's only one team in London, as we all know, and people can tweet me all they want. But let's be real. Piers Morgan is the worst example of an Arsenal supporter. He is a lifelong supporter, okay? He gave this dude a jersey with his name on it, with a 4-5 on the back. Also, Barron Trump has been seen wearing an Arsenal kit. That's a whole other thing. You know, he's a child. He's figuring it out. But he basically was like, it was just crazy. They had this exchange where he was like, are you an Arsenal fan? And Trump's like, no, not particularly, no. And then he's like, Piers Morgan says, don't kill the dream, Mr. President. I can't take this xenophobic psychopath Piers Morgan. He's already like a very problematic guy. I just got triggered because he's bringing my club into it. We have one of the most diverse supporters, like the kinds of variety of supporters of the club. It's great. And we're not xenophobic. We're all inclusive. And to bring this man in the conversation is very upsetting. And that's my rant. I have to go.
There was a great moment where he asked him about something less important than what you're talking about, Miles, obviously.
Oh, okay.
Climate change.
I don't believe
that. And he said, do you believe in climate change? Do you believe it exists? And Trump said, there's a cooling. There is a heating. And I mean, look, it used to not be climate change. It used to be global warming. Which I guess he's just talking about the name change, the rebranding. He says that wasn't working too well because it was getting too cold all over the place. The ice caps were going to melt. They were going to be gone by now. And now they're setting records. So, okay, they're at a record level.
What?
There were so many things happening, Piers. I tell you what I believe in. I believe in clean air. I believe in crystal clear, beautiful water. I believe in just having good cleanliness.
Oh, yeah. That's why you gutted the EPA?
It's just why he's a fucking germphobe. Yeah. That's also why I will not shake your hand, Piers. He also had a paper cover over his water glass the whole time because he doesn't like dirt.
Trump should swim open mouth in the Hudson River. That should be his punishment.
Right.
Rather than jail, I would love to see
he
him.
He believes in cleanliness, but he's at McDonald's.
I want him to. I want him to beer bong 40 ounces of Hudson River water.
Bruh, if Trump has shown us nothing, it's that we should all strive for more in life. Like, I used to think that qualifications were a necessity, and now I know they're a mere obstacle front of me. Like, so what? I don't know what I'm doing. Right. That doesn't mean I can't still do it.
Right.
Like, this response is the stupidest shit I ever fucking heard in my life.
The
grass. I like clean grass.
Arctic Sea Ice has set repeated lows, but notice he didn't say that they were setting records in either direction. He just said
records.
The ice is setting records. So
yeah,
they're at a record level.
Yeah, the worst ever.
Right.
Anyway, cool.
There's also apparently some records in terms of how far spread the ice is, and it's at like records in terms of being spread the furthest, but that's because of increased winds from global warming and because the ice is like breaking apart and melting. Very interesting interview, the hard-hitting interview we've all been waiting for. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back. Let's talk about the memo, because there's, you know, you might have seen release the memo trending. This has become a big right-wing cause celeb. So Devin Nunes, this is the guy who recused himself from the Intelligence Committee investigation, right? And he did that because at the time he was basically sharing information from the Intelligence Committee, like stuff that was not supposed to be shared and that was supposed to be confidential. He got out of a car in the middle of DC, was just like, I gotta go, and like told the person to stop the car, got out of one car, got into another car like he was in a fucking spy movie, and went immediately to the White House to just brief people on shit that he knew from the Senate Intelligence Committee. So it was like, this guy's clearly compromised.
Well, and also, like, he used information he got from the White House to present to the White House.
Right.
Like, just to create a story. Right. To be like, look what I've got. And it's like, motherfucker, that came from the White House. Like, this is all transparent theatrics.
Right. Right. So somehow this guy who's supposed to have recused himself is now, he put together this memo based on, you know, his opinion of the investigation, claiming that, you know, that Trump is being treated unfairly. Right.
Well, yeah, it's trying to essentially lay out the fact that there's corruption in the FBI, that they're overstepping their power, that Rod Rosenstein is, like, you know, acting out of line by because of this, that, and the other to deal with Carter Page, et cetera. So really, I mean, if you boil it down, what this memo is doing is essentially trying to create a pretext to fire Rod Rosenstein. Because if they can, you know, create the narrative that, like, oh, God, like, Rod Rosenstein, he's fucking up. Like, yeah, right. It would make sense for Trump to fire him. That is the first domino that needs to fall so he can put someone in his place to fire Robert Mueller. Because right. Robert Mueller reports directly to Rod Rosenstein. So that's what stinks like shit about this whole thing, is that if that happens, that's really the first Saturday Night Massacre domino to go down. Because I would be blown away if he finds a reason to fire Rod Rosenstein and whoever replaces him doesn't fire Robert Mueller.
Can I ask you guys a bigger question, bigger picture question?
Yeah.
So much gets compared back to, like, Watergate, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But in that time of our country, I wasn't there, but everything that I've learned from it, it's that it got to a point where no matter what aisle you were on or what you voted for, whether you voted for Nixon or you didn't, it got to a point where you were like, he's got to go.
Yeah.
This is like the country was like, this isn't okay.
Right.
So to me, that's the big difference, because all of this stuff, a Saturday Night Massacre where everybody who should be doing the right thing gets fired and everything gets pulled out, like, will it even matter if so much of this country doesn't care?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that there just isn't outrage. Like, I say, people always like, well, how do things change? But Vietnam changed, really. Like, we really started, the Pentagon Papers obviously really helped. But what that really made people do is your World War II veteran and your Korean War veterans were like, well, wait a sec. I'm against this too. And it wasn't just like long-haired kids anymore, like, yelling this. It was people who watched their kids come home and either not come home at all or come home and be like, we're over there for no reason. And then that reached a greater populace where people are like, this war is bad. And then once senators and congressmen and women started feeling like, oh, we're not going to be reelected, they thought, we really do need to get out of this war. We need to really, this president needs to be changed for what has happened. To me, that's the difference. Like, what's going to happen in this country when you do have a quote-unquote smoking gun but nobody cares that it went off.
I don't know if that nobody cares. Right?
I know, but I mean, like enough to feel like it's not acceptable. We've learned so much in this presidency that everything we thought were rules for the way somebody had to behave were really just implied suggestions, and somebody could just stop doing them, and we found out where we are right now. Right. People are like, yeah, I don't care that
Clearly, the tipping point will be if Robert Mueller is fired. That's when people need to show the fuck up.
Hopefully. I actually don't know if it will be because – so that's the thing. Like I've been talking about this podcast,
to me, that's,
Slow Burn, that where it takes you back to what Watergate was like at the time. And yeah, the Saturday Night Massacre like tipped everybody to be like, oh, okay, so he's clearly the bad guy.
Right.
But they didn't have Fox News. That's the thing that I keep coming back to is there wasn't a propaganda wing that was – consistently putting out, you know,
just lies,
just essentially lies and a op-ed of what, you know, the president wants people to believe. And so I genuinely don't know if there is a smoking gun, if people will give a shit enough to.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm afraid of. That's what I'm really.
I think that's why people need to talk about that enough to realize that if that happens, we're steps away from full on, you know, being like under the rule of some despotic government.
Right. But there were points early in the Watergate investigation. And, you know, I thought Watergate, like there was a break-in, like Woodward and Bernstein started like nailing the story and like it was just a big wave and it overtook the country. There were a lot of different points at which people like didn't give enough of a shit. And then there was this big Senate committee where, you know, different people were interviewed and it was like the OJ trial of its time and everybody was like watching it and that started tipping people's opinion. And then
that crescendo of like Woodward and Bernstein as they were building and people weren't paying attention and then started to over time, like you just mentioned, any crescendo like that as it builds now, what you didn't have then was this behemoth of this media that reached millions and millions of people kicking the chair out from under it before it could really get people's attention and build. That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing with this memo is like, can we look at this memo as in and of itself being a form of obstruction? Because it's trying to discredit the very intelligence community that is trying to look out for national security and, you know, completely change the conversation.
And it's either directly or implicitly.
It's a malicious distraction at best.
Right.
And it's straight up obstruction at worst.
Right.
Because it's completely derailing the conversation.
And the point of doing it, putting it together, and then putting it out is either directed by or implied from the White House to do this.
Absolutely.
So that's even...
Because Devin Nunes is his little... Right. He carries the water for him.
Right. So, I mean, and there were people on the Republican side up until the end who were still supporting Nixon.
Oof.
Up until like the
very end. You don't hear about them much.
Like today's, I think, the last episode of Slow Burn, and they're... talking about these town halls that Republican senators were having or Democratic senators were having in the South where they would meet with these Southern people and the Southern people were like, we don't give a shit about Watergate. Like, just let Nixon do his job. And it was like 50-50 split. And then the transcripts of all the tapes Nixon had been keeping of his just like meetings in his office broke, and that was like when everyone was like, oh shit. Well, he had like the smoking the smoking gun in Watergate was like the smokingest of guns.
Yeah.
It was like he was caught holding it and then like recording himself committing the murder. Like it was just you really couldn't have found a more guilty motherfucker than Nixon.
That's
in
why
that case.
But yeah, that's why people just need to look at it like this. Everything that the GOP has been doing, from whether it's the House Intelligence Committee to people like Chuck Grassley to the president himself, they're clearly acting in this way because they have shit to hide, right? There's no other way to look at that. And if you can accept that, and you can accept the fact that through the overwhelming amount of congressmen that have voted for the sanctions, that we clearly do acknowledge that Russia did interfere with our
election.
Right.
That's what I've said to like people in my family. I'm like, and they're not fervent Trump supporters, but I've said, like, if you believe everything that they tell you, you just believe, like, they didn't do anything wrong, they aren't bad people, da-da-da-da-da, or like, okay, whatever. But at some point, when do you start saying, but why do they keep lying about whether or not they met with somebody? Like, why does every person – because you end up realizing they did lie about it. Oh, I forgot. I didn't recall. Da-da-da. And now I recall this. Like, whether you fall on the side of, like, oh, I don't think they had bad intentions or I think they're good people, forget that for a second. Just how many times will it happen before you go, yeah, but why do they keep lying about it if they didn't do anything wrong? And I don't think they did anything wrong. Like, I do personally. But if that's your attitude – I just, like, how much does that need to happen before you're like, yeah, that does. Why would you keep
I mean, we're just in a very interesting time right now. Yeah, so, exactly. Guys, let's just stay tuned.
And then there's also this article that came out in The Atlantic that we all read, and it's dark, man. It is
fucking
dark. It's about Paul Manafort, and it's called American Hustler, which is definitely a complimentary, like, a way of making his struggle sound cool. But it opens with him, like, crying and threatening to kill himself to his daughters, and his daughters being like, oh, brother, this shit again.
He's being a real tightwad with the cash.
Right.
Yeah. Like, he's like, he's going to make me serve hot dogs at my wedding kickoff party.
Right.
It does feel like when the inevitable biopic comes out of this, the role of the daughters is going to be a plum one.
Yeah, right?
That's going to be the one, the Oscar bait.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, he was a tortured dude. I mean, like, this article is wild because it shows you it's like Wolf of Wall Street almost,
right,
but for
the
lobbying.
80s. Yeah.
Yeah.
He created lobbying, as we know.
As we know, like
the super corrupt
power broker.
Right.
Yeah.
He brought everything, like, under the same roof, right? That was his innovation.
Yeah.
And, like, how did that change? It used to be sort of just lame people offering to, like, you know, help a politician get a job, but they were saying that, you know, the lobbying industry just in general was struggling to squeak by before Manafort, and then he came in the late 70s and early 80s, and just now it's like they're the hot shit in DC. Yeah.
Yeah, with Roger Stone, of course, at his side, which is the other crazy thing, too.
Backtad himself.
Yeah. As much as you read this article and you hear Manafort, you also see Roger Stone come up a bunch, and you're like, God damn.
Yeah.
This
it's
is
just
fucking
the
wild.
Same fucking dudes. Just stay in the picture.
I mean, but I guess the one thing is, look, it's a long read. The Atlantic, however, did convert it into, like, an audiobook. So you can listen to it. We'll put that in the footnotes. Because, honestly, when you listen to this, it's very hard to think that anything that happened with Paul Manafort and the Russians and the Trump campaign was anything but egregious fuckery on his part. There's he can't feign ignorance here.
So when he starts getting involved in the Trump campaign, his friends and advisors are like, dude, you cannot do this because he's in a lot of financial trouble, right? He owes dictators tons of money. He is just... You know,
he
really
stole
fucked.
Money from a fucking oligarch, like
a Russian
savage
oligarch.
Dude. He's like, savage shit.
He's like the friend in Rounders or like some other action movie where they're like, "Oh man, I'm good for it," and like the guy has to come in and save their ass. Like that's Paul Manafort at the beginning of this, and then Trump's like, "Yeah, you can run my campaign."
Right. Well, because the whole thing, he was so broke, he knew the only way he was going to kind of start getting his money back is if he could work with Trump, and best case scenario, Trump becomes president, and that helps elevate his star because everything went wrong once Yanukovych was ousted in Ukraine.
Or
that
even
was his
just
main cash cow.
Like placing. Like I just feel like the profile. You just go all in on the right wing machine, right? And you just assume like being next to Trump is good enough to like at least get me out of this.
Right.
Fuck.
Well, he's like, but he was the kind of dude who would just be like, who was it? Marcos in the Philippines, like gave him a briefcase, like $100 million or $10 million. And he was like, hey, can you give this to Reagan?
Right.
And he's like, yeah, I'll give it to Reagan. And just straight up walked off with the cash.
Yeah.
And didn't give
so
him
dope.
Shit. So like his whole thing was just being like, yo, I can get you here. And that was like his money making scheme. And so now that was his whole idea with Trump is like, okay, I owe this Russian oligarch like $20 million that I stole from him. And that was his whole thing was like,
he didn't tell Trump that.
No.
This is his internal monologue as he's like, yeah, you know, I'm doing great and I can like get you in the right doors. And you know, he's a wheeler dealer. He had a big name. We talked before about how when they were talking about his money laundering, they said that he'd like laundered money through, I think it was like $300,000 worth of suits or something. And that's like not that far fetched because that's like, that was his thing was like getting fancy suits.
Yeah.
Money laundering, it really is an art.
Yeah.
Like it really, I do not have the creativity to come up with enough ways to move my, although my Bitcoin poker scheme is not
right.
That.
There you go.
Right. I mean, I think it's a long article. It has everything from like crazy arms deals that go south to, him trying to like launder reputations for dictators and murderous fucking, it's wild. Just look at the whole thing. And when you get to the point of when he meets Trump, he's like, look, he's broke as fuck, but he realizes Trump is also cheap. So if he goes like, hey, I'll work free with, for free, Trump is going to be like, oh, this dude's rich. He doesn't need money. I'm going to bring him on Team Trump.
Yeah.
And that's how he gets in. And the way he even gets there, he calls Tom Barrack and he's like, I need to get to Donald Trump. And that's how he got there. So it gives you another dimension where you thought Paul Manafort was just like some doofy dude. And you're like, oh, homie was straight evil.
Well, it's also just like double grifters or triple grifters. Like,
right. Grifters grifting other grifters. Yeah.
It's like,
grifter's
right.
Grifter's going to grift.
They're on a pyramid scheme of who is, like, they're just passing around the same briefcase full of money at this point. Right. They have to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a dream team of sort of incompetent crookedness.
I mean, they all had to go in. Every single person in the Trump administration went in with the plan of let's shoot the moon.
Right.
Like, let's do everything. Everyone is going to fail so hard that we're going to win.
Right.
And they did it, which is, again, as a gambler, admirable as hell.
Right.
I love it.
Super producer Nick Stumpf was just saying, it's funny to think about the campaign from the Russian perspective because, like, they already have Carter Page and, like, all these, you know, people that they have Mike Flynn, you know, real in deep with the Trump campaign. And then Trump's like, and guess who our campaign manager is?
Yeah.
Paul fucking Manafort.
The man who made Viktor Yanukovych.
Right.
Do you think there are, like, two different teams at the FSB just playing, like, fantasy chaos league against each other?
Right.
And they're just like, I don't know, all my chips in. Because it's got to be fun for them at this point.
He must have blew up that grid, though, and, like, and enter new player Manafort. They're like, oh, shit,
yeah.
What?
Manafort.
That means, yeah, someone had a 1,001 bet on that came in with Manafort.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, so dope.
We wanted to talk about this New York Times story that just came out, I believe, yesterday. Where they did a really in-depth study into whether the Fast and the Furious movies cause people to drive faster, essentially.
That sounds like a wild bet, like
right.
That two journalists make. They're like smoking weed, like, yeah, you think people drive faster after seeing a movie? No, yeah, no. Let's go to the
that needs
pull
to
some
be,
receipts.
They need to have a section of the paper that is just that, just
this
like
kind of
standard
bets.
Drunk conversations, like settling
turned
them
into actual journalistic investigations.
That I know to be true about myself, but like I definitely didn't know that you could statistically prove it. But like I definitely drive faster after seeing Fast and the Furious movies.
Right. So they did an exhaustive search, or like went through many speeding tickets. Right.
Right. They just looked at a single county, I believe, and just, you know, across time, and did a really detailed statistical analysis of, you know, how much speeding tickets rose and what the speed people were clocked at was when they got speeding tickets. And there was a significant, like a 20% rise in the months after a Fast and the Furious movie came out. And people were more likely to get caught speeding near movie theaters,
right.
Also.
Awesome.
And then they compared it with like Hunger Games release weekends.
Right.
No fluctuation in violations.
Hunger Games had no fluctuation. So. Yeah, I don't know. This is something that I've always thought was underrated, and I think I might think that because I am more affected by popular culture than other people, but just how influenced we are by popular culture, like, that seems to be a huge...
You mean by the Daily Zeitgeist?
Yeah, by the
Thank
Daily
you so
Zeitgeist.
Much.
Like,
yeah.
I've just thought it's underrated how we change minds. And,
every day, every day.
Are creating new worlds.
We change hearts, too.
No, but, like, growing up, I was...
One and the same.
Always... I would, like, find myself, like, talking like a movie character or something just because, I don't know. I
That's
would,
true.
Like,
yeah.
Take it in.
When I was watching The Sopranos a lot,
right.
I had this weird New York accent for, like, a couple months.
Oh, my God. The week I got the Mr. Show DVD set was by far my most insufferable.
Really?
There's no worse person than Andrew the week after he watched all of Mr. Show.
Yeah, and I mean, there's other examples, like the whole thing with family being a big value with mafia people. That was mostly started by The Godfather, and like they incorporated that afterwards, but it was mostly, prior to that, it was just like crime organizations like any other gang.
It was just like the 40 Italians on your block.
Right, exactly.
It's fine.
But not family dinners and all that.
Right, right. Yeah, and the way they dressed was influenced by Brando in another movie. So it's, I don't know. I think that's an underrated thing. Do you feel like you've made any big life decisions based on what you're watching?
Man, I think I don't know if it's what I'm watching. Maybe it is. I really used to only exclusively smoke blunts because of Wu-Tang Clan. And seeing Method Man and Redman. And I'm like, oh, they're always, okay, smoke rolling up a backwood. I don't know. Hip-hop definitely changed, altered a lot of my consumption habits from drugs and alcohol 100%.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. By design, I hope. Right? That's why, that's why they make the music.
Right, right.
Going back to the video game thing, actually, now I'm now that we're talking about it, the... Look, this is gonna age me a little bit, but when my roommates were
ColecoVision came out,
when my roommates were playing a lot of Grand Theft Auto 3, it really desensitized me. Not in the way that you would think to violence. It really desensitized me to how allowed you are to just walk into traffic.
Right,
like
you just thought you could just like cross.
I would just kind of do it, and just kind of stare down cars, being like, "The fuck you want?" And this is in New York.
You're so like, I'll pull out a rocket launcher.
Yeah, a little more acceptable, but it made you feel like you were invincible to cars, or made me feel like I was invincible to cars.
It gave me the opposite effect of where I would be driving. I'm like, what if I just ran these people over, like I'm in GTA?
Yeah,
and then
the New York Times next. Study that they need to do is whether in the aftermath of Grand Theft Auto game releases, if like pedestrians getting hit like rises. Ooh, I bet it does.
I don't know, but there was a study that said violent video games don't necessarily affect people's behavior towards violence, right?
There have been a thousand studies saying both.
Yeah.
It's
oh boy.
I think the thing is, it's more subtle than that, right? It's less like, oh, you think you can just beat people up. But I do think there's like something akin to like the just, you know, you become less sensitized to how dangerous a car is.
Right. Or maybe like you could do like research into like kind of disciplinary issues in a school on like either side of a video game release.
Yeah.
Because you might walk in your class and just talk spicy to your teacher or like rough a kid up. What's up, dog? I'm high off this Vice City right now.
Right. Yeah.
I just like the idea of like, first of all, I'm just using this as poor man's copyright. I just really want to do someone to do a Purge movie that's just about tax fraud. But, you know, all crime is legal. Doesn't have to be violent crime.
Yeah, right.
So just
like
tax amnesty?
Or whatever, I don't know. Right. Like if you
file a bunch of insider trading.
If you follow your file your fraudulent taxes on Purge Day, what happens?
Right, that's like, a great idea.
I made nothing this year.
I just think there's room for a comedy in that universe. That's all. But second of all, I'm like, or with the Hunger Games example, like, it's not like, oh, people are out shooting arrows because the Hunger Games thing is out. But, like, do people have a different like relationship to authority or whatever? Like, how does that? It's the power of the media, y'all. I wish someone had studied this.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, yeah, I wonder if bow hunting increases after Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Or Winter's Bone.
Well, my friend's kid is all about Kung Fu because of Ninjago.
Oh, right. Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. Bringing it full circle. Yeah, and I do feel like movies, despite the fact that they're supposedly made by liberals in... you know, Hollyweird in urban places. They, like the Hunger Games, a writer at Cracked, David Wong, talked about how, like, the values in our movies are all, like, pro-rural people, like, people out in the sticks and, like, anti-people in cities. Like, for instance, in the Hunger Games, the capital, everyone's, like, a elaborately dressed, like, weirdo, or in Star Wars, like, you know, the empire is like the city, and then like Luke, the hero, is out in the rural areas. All right, we're going to take a break. And we're back. But for now, we have more important things to talk about, because the Super Bowl is coming up, and you know what that means? Halftime show. I don't know why I sang that, but people are...
You're a big fan.
Yeah, Justin Timberlake is the halftime performer. People are taking bets on who will appear with him, because it doesn't feel like he's the type of... Like, Lady Gaga was the first performer in a long time to not just have a bunch of guests appear with her last year. So they're taking bets on who will appear. They've got T.I. at 3-1.
Why T.I.?
Timberland at 5-1. Jay-Z,
Timbaland,
8-1.
Please.
Madonna, 9-1. Jimmy Fallon, which could be funny, 10-1. Bob Dylan, weird. Jessica Biel, he just brings his wife out.
And my beautiful wife!
Yeah, give it up for her, y'all. Remember her from 7.
A non-musician. Andy Samberg, 50-1. They'll do a dick in the box thing. And then this one, Janet Jackson, 200-1. Mm-hmm. Like, I would put all my money on that one.
No.
Of course they're going to bring Janet Jackson out.
I want him to.
Yes, and then she has
because
to.
I think he needs to reconcile.
Thank you.
But I just, given my observations, I think Justin wants to move on from that, and I don't think he wants to.
Well, he owes her.
He does.
Right.
Look, you're talking to, I've never considered myself a stan for anyone.
Oh, you're, well, before you say anything, she's wearing a Rhythm Nation hat.
But I am a JT stan.
A JT, I thought you were going to say Janet Jackson fan.
No, I love Janet too.
Oh, so you're hugely, a JT. Oh, whoa.
I'm a huge JT fan, but I'm disappointed in the way he handled that, of course. I've also met him, so.
Oh. So, like, you kind of know.
You know his heart. You know his heart.
I know his heart. I've met him once. And I think he's, I love him. I love the new music. I'm really excited about the new album. I think it's classic Justin.
Huh.
If you're not into his music, then don't listen to it. I don't care.
I will not.
But I do like what he's doing on this new album.
Interesting.
I've seen him in concert several times.
Were you on the Stripped Justified tour?
The what?
Stripped Justified when he toured with Christina Aguilera?
No. Not great that tour. Long ago.
Justified was, I like Justified as an album.
Yeah,
that was like,
it's a great
that's
album.
One I listened to a lot. And then I listened to other stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, he's had some missteps. But like, I think that my thing is, I think Justin became famous as a child, and he's lived in a very sheltered, protected world for the majority of his life. So I just don't think
he's
fully,
out of touch. A bit.
He's a little at, how could you not
yeah,
be?
Yeah, for sure.
But his newest song with Chris Stapleton, which I really enjoy, is called Say Something, which goes back to my earlier thing about silence. And the lyric is, sometimes it's better to say nothing at all. Like, the best way to say something is to say nothing at all. And I love that message, but I'm also like, Justin, but you should say something about Janet.
About
that's kind of, but also, look, you know, we demand so much from our celebrities to the point where it's almost like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. I wish he took more responsibility for some stuff, but like...
Well, I think this is the way he can make it right with Janet, okay?
He should.
You bring Janet out,
right.
And then at the end of the song, she pulls his dick out.
Hell
yeah. In front of
everybody.
Yeah. She rips off a little piece of fabric, and he's just,
boom.
His dick is right
it's
there.
Just dick
and he
is
has,
right
like,
there.
A weird dick ring on. Like, yeah, she had that weird dick ring on.
Yeah,
she has, like, a big sun dick ring.
Yeah, he can have some dick jewelry.
Yeah.
But now that's just, let's just even it up. If you're going to put her on blast for having her nipples out there. I guess that's the
thing
equivalent.
Is,
but who knows? They might be like, and that was the greatest Super Bowl show ever.
The fact that that was even scandalous still to this day
right.
is unbelievable to me. Like, there's people, I guess a group of parents like wrote a letter to JT just begging him not to do anything provocative. You know, it's like, if you want something provocative, watch the men getting concussions over and over again on
right.
the field. Watch the way that, you know, we treat our black athletes. Like, that's damaging more your children
yeah,
more
than
seeing
a nipple
seeing
with a
star
on
sticker on it. Like,
yeah.
Like, they've never seen a tit before. Didn't they used to eat on your tit? Like, I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't. Then that's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't. I don't want my children to know about the mysteries
of life.
I mean,
like, it's just all of it is so American.
I'm not saying I agree with it, but I totally understand where America not understand where America is coming from, but like that is the easiest thing to predict ever that they're going to be upset about that and not like
yeah,
well,
yeah,
because
that,
of our,
yeah,
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 puritanical background,
right,
of course,
right, absolutely.
A black breast.
Now
if that was a look. If that was Jessica Biel's titty up there, it would not have been the same,
right?
And we all know that. And that was sort of the conversation that whole controversy kicked off too. Was just sort of like, ooh, are we holding people to like what's
right.
going on? He did it to her, but
she got in trouble.
Yeah,
and then so his response was not adequate. Like he wasn't like, yeah, that was my bad because I was the one doing it. Like
he just sort of distanced it. He let her take all the heat.
Yeah.
He didn't step in and go, hey, everybody, like. It was a mistake. Like I take full responsibility. Like he just didn't really stand up.
Yeah.
For
he Warren Beatty'd the Oscar.
yes,
right,
best
exactly.
picture. And isn't he like sort of disliked in the black community for
yes.
that
oh, yeah.
story?
And cultural appropriation.
Right.
Claims of, you know, him. His music is definitely borrowed.
His hair upset a lot of Japanese people because he had that ramen hair. It was very bad. Yeah.
Yeah. He made a comment on Twitter a while back that was just sort of condescending and missing the point. He did a little bit of All Lives
Matter. What did you think of that Supplies video?
So stupid.
I believe it's the supply video.
I got you. Okay, yeah. So listen, I know all the words already.
What does he mean when he says, fell up out of it so I can climb back in? I'm a thoughtful lover or something?
Yeah, sounds like he's talking about his dick falling out of a woman.
I love that the video is trying to be socially like woke, but the song is about fucking.
Yes.
And that my thing is like, Justin does songs about fucking. And that's the majority of his music. Mm. And that's what he's really good at. Mm. And then you're trying to throw in some social awareness shit into the video.
Weird.
Made no sense. But that also does remind me of like the golden age of music videos when the music video made no sense.
Yeah. Right. And you spent like $2 million on it. Right. Like, what, whatever.
Like, remember that time? Like, when every video that came on when
there used to be MTV World premieres.
Yeah. It would be what? Yeah.
Busta Rhymes is singing in the rain like a gargoyle on the side of a building.
Man. That run of Guns N' Roses videos where they, they were like, we promise the third one will make sense of it all. And then it was like, nothing made sense. Use your illusion.
JT is getting corny, but I don't mind
it. So his new album was like teased as being his return to his roots and like Man of the Woods. And then the music does sound very much like everything else I've heard from him.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of, it has a more country twang.
I actually do think Justin is a really talented musician. Like, and he has he's always just done his own thing. Like, he'll do a song and then put a 3-minute coda on the end of it that's like a totally different song. Like,
Coda, are you a musician?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've done some music. All right. I play piano for
seeing that bird's eye? Looking at that bird's eye? Okay.
Yeah. He'll do things. He does things his way. You know, he's like kind of, he doesn't mind stepping into just a slightly different world with his music. But I think these songs have like country melodies to them or country rules to them that then he layers on his
supplies definitely has that melodic
I think it's more subtle. I think people are just expected because the promo made it seem like it was going to be a country
album.
It's
gonna be like his Nebraska
Bruce love the first video is him as a robot, and I was like
Steve Jobs
right.
It's like a Steve Jobs
this hilarious
man. Yeah
I guess to also think about this too, right? We're talking about, you know, Super Bowl moments.
Mm.
And the one thing that I just want to bring up, sorry to do a hard transition away from Justin, but I feel like we owe this to society, is Left Shark, right?
Yeah.
Right. Katy Perry's Left Shark.
Yeah.
He went on NPR and
NPR tracked him down.
Explained himself.
Yeah.
Now, did you when you first saw Left Shark, what did you think was going on? This was just a total fuck up.
I thought a dude was fucking up. Yeah.
I thought he was fucking up too.
I thought it was like a Naked Gun situation where he had knocked the actual dancer out and like gotten in the suit
and then
bit
off more than he could chew.
Up and then was like, oh shit,
I don't
know.
It was just crazy fun movements on a stage but I didn't analyze it too hard.
Well,
I just thought it looked funny.
Well, listen to this because we have it straight from the shark's mouth. What happened?
All right, so take me to halftime. You're out there. This is the question that America wants to know.
This is the million-dollar question. What happened?
What happened?
So there's a set choreography. There's also what's called freestyle choreography, or like you get to move around or play your character as a dancer, right? So
this seems like a critical piece of information. You had some flexibility.
Yeah, you have flexibility because you are your own character.
Okay.
I'm in a 7-foot blue shark costume. There's no cool. There's no cool in that. So what's the other option? Well, I'm going to play a different character.
Okay, hang on. This is a moment here. Because America, they thought you were totally flubbing this up.
Yeah, totally.
What character were you going for?
Here we go.
This is an underdog. It's an everyday person. No,
that's showing
that
you don't
that?
Have to be perfect.
You don't have to be
it
perfect.
It worked.
Nobody
so he
has
was
to be
playing
perfect,
the thing I thought.
Is
an
he doing I meant to do that right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, exactly.
It's yeah.
Like, he might be, but
she's like, an everyday person who can't dance would be doing this.
But it's when you watch, like, there was, like, clearly choreography to, like, to the chorus
maybe
of the song.
Maybe he got the timing wrong on when you were supposed to go
right,
freestyle.
Because he was kind of doing the choreography and doing it half wrong. So, to me, that doesn't feel like that was quite the freestyle moment.
Yeah. Right.
But, I don't know. Look, if he's trying to say this was a...
But that was the ultimate effect of Left Shark.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in the end, the result was more important than
it
maybe
worked.
The intention.
Yeah. He's a lucky man.
I mean, if you've ever been to a Flaming Lips concert...
Oh, God.
Like, where they bring out, like, every character. I mean, I think she probably got that idea from, from them.
It had a Flaming Lips.
But, like, he brings out, you know, Flaming Lips brings out, like, all these people in costumes, and it's just chaos, and there's, like,
giant balls bouncing around.
Beach balls everywhere, you know, and that reminded me of that. And so, to me, it didn't look as much of a fuck up as it did, like, oh, she's trying to do that thing.
Right.
That Flaming Lips does, like, a fun party, and, like, some of it's off. But it was just so funny.
Yeah.
And it
made
everyone feel so good. I love Left Shark.
It's a hero. Everyone does. That's why it's just funny that it also that it took this long to like for this person to come out and be like, let me tell you exactly what happened.
The Super Bowl, gosh, people take the NFL so seriously.
Actually, thinking back, what you asked what I thought at the time, I thought I was looking at the wrong shark because I thought we were talking stage left shark. And I was like looking at the shark to her left. Ah. And I was like, they kind of seem in sync, and then I figured out what people were talking about.
Oh, yeah. Some people, it was controversial, though, too.
Yeah, the whole performance was controversial, right?
Wasn't there? Satan was...
Yeah.
Satan abounds.
People take halftime show and all of this so seriously. Yeah. It's like, it's a sport that we made up.
But this is imagery that is being dumped into brains around
what's funny,
the world.
Though, when you start looking up like Katy Perry,
Satan was hidden in there.
If you look up Katy Perry satanic imagery Super Bowl, then there are articles like, was Lady Gaga Super Bowl satanic? Was Beyonce Super? So it feels like every time there's a woman up there performing at the halftime show, it's satanic. And who knows? I'm sure they'll find a way to say Justin was being satanic.
If you are someone who is offended by pop music because you think it's part of the system of Satan because you are so hardcore Christian, then yes, it is satanic because you think that anything that challenges or distracts you from God and purity is satanic. So it's like you can find, I mean, that's
LaCroix
the
is
definition
satanic.
Of Satan is like away from God. So it's like,
yeah.
Well, unless you're Satanist and then you stand for indulgence where Christ was about abstaining, right?
Right. Damn, that's deep.
Abstaining. Yeah. Like, there's nothing in the Bible about abstaining.
No, about of sort of like of keeping things.
Christ was into partying, man. It's like
wine, but it's about staying in line, whereas Satanism is about indulging yourself or like indulging
being
whatever
selfish.
Your urges are.
Yeah.
But it's human. Not even an evil way, because when you look at like the tenets, it'll be like, if you do not respect a man, do not have them in your home. It's like, oh, okay, so don't like talk, don't be fake with somebody and then invite him into your house. I'm like, okay, I'll fuck with you, Satan.
Right. This is all part of Miles's satanic propaganda.
My new podcast
campaign.
Called Satan.
I have to leave.
Okay, great.
Because you are filled with satanic imagery.
That is definitely true. It's also important to note that there was a lot of satanic imagery in there. I guess what we define as satanic imagery might be loose definition, but, you know, there
mirrors.
Were pyramids, mirrors on the floor. I don't know. What else, Miles? Giant lions? That's got to be something
satanic.
Yeah,
well, because, like, I mean, 1 Peter 5, verse 8 says, be sober, be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. So she rolled up on, she pulled up on a fucking lion.
Yeah.
So the MGM lion is satanic.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
If you align it.
The Lion King.
Right.
With satanic.
The Pink Floyd album, which does have a pyramid on it. Oh.
Uh huh.
My God.
Go
those
on.
Those are done by white men, so it's okay.
The dollar bill has a.
Yeah, the
satanic
dollar bill
shit on
is
it.
Full of trippy shit.
And isn't trippy that ironic?
Shit,
because the dollar. Money is the devil.
Is our, and is our God simultaneously. Yeah. It's like, well, what
these
is
are
God
questions
really?
That I would encourage you to discuss with your pastor.
Thank you so much.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. It means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.